Hey, this is James from StravelPunk.com, and I have another episode this week, because I do. This is not the normal time. This is not the normal time the episode is coming out, but it is coming out this week. So this episode is on... So recently, I listened to the 1 Second After book on Audible. They don't sponsor the episode, but I know a lot of you guys do check them out, and if you go there, you can get a free trial. Not anything like audible.com/survivalpunk. No, just go to audible.com. Until they start throwing me free audiobooks, I just subscribe to them. I think I spend like, I don't know, $14 a month, and I get one credit. One credit buys any book, no matter how much it costs, which I found an audio textbook on, I don't know, the fall of Rome or something, and it was like 127 hours, one credit, you know, or they've got like short audio essays, one credit. It's kind of a weird system the way it works out, the way that, I wonder if you can just buy credits, I don't know, but the subscription isn't that bad, and I do listen to quite a lot of audiobooks, so it's worth it. You know, if you're gonna, like, I don't do Netflix or Hulu, so Audible is what I do. And in some cases, I could easily go through more than one credit a month, and other months I won't download any. So, and I use that because I think, like I've said before in the past, I try not to listen to too many podcasts, because I don't want to sound like them. Every once in a while, I will check out some podcasts. But I feel that if I am a huge fan and only, like, will just devour and listen to a podcast, like, if I spend, you know, if I listen to the Jack Spirico Survival Podcast 5 days a week, you're basically going to get, you know, the Survival Punk Survival Podcast ripoff. And I don't really feel that that's fair, and I don't want to water me down, but, you know, sometimes I will check out his shows because that's what inspired me. So, another good podcast. But anyway, that's what we're going to talk about today. Next week, Mike will be back. Mike is in Couch Potato Mike. He is in Texas with his buddy Todd, and they are having a good vacation, eating MREs and playing with paracord and all that good stuff. Awesome times. And we will have at least one listener question next week. Matt French from Oklahoma, he called in with a question, and I'm not going to answer it this week. I'm going to do the 1 Second After podcast. If you have a question for a show like that, you know, if you have a question for the show, you want to call it in, you can do that. I have a number, and I believe now it actually says, thanks for calling the Survival Punk Podcast, leave your message. Whereas before, it used to be this cartoon character that would sing a song like, thank you for, oh, it would sound like the old Mentos song, basically. So if you want to call in, then you may do so at area code 615-657-9104. 615-657-9104. And at some point in the future, I may do this thing where you can just go to the website, survivalpunk.com, and you can leave your voicemail on the website, if that's your thing. And like, for me, I have a decently good microphone, which would be better quality than calling in on a cell phone. If you call in on a cell phone and the audio is bad, then probably not going to work. So, but that is a number you can call it in. I would love to get enough questions to do, you know, a whole Q&A show. If it becomes to the point where, and I'm going to throw myself under the bus here, if it gets to the point where I have enough questions every week, I will do a standalone Q&A show instead of, I don't want to bog down the regular podcast. And if the questions are, if the questions are to the point where they can be entire shows, I will break them out And if they are short, quick ones, I will probably just add that as a segment to the show. Because the shows now, they used to have all sorts of different little segments. And over the years, it sort of evolved to one long topic, which I feel people are liking. Instead of before, where we'd cover like two news topics, and then we'd have like a main topic, and then we'd have like a nutrition punk, and we'd have, you know, and I felt that a lot of the segments were not getting the attention they needed. Like, if we covered a main topic and, you know, we spent longer reading the news stories than we did talking about the main topic, then it's not really the main topic anymore, is it? But let's get into the review before I just ramble and ramble and, you know, waste the day away. You can call in your questions. If you do not want to call in your question, you may email me, jamesrawpunk.com. And one more bit of house cleaning. Shout out to listener Will. Will, you know who you are. He corrected me. So diatomaceous earth is not lava rock, which I don't know. I heard someone say it somewhere, and you know, I didn't fact check it. I'm like, oh, okay, lava rock, that makes sense, whatever. It is tiny dead fossilized diatoms. Diatoms are tiny sea creatures that are glass-like in their structure, which is, by the way, diatoms, dead diatoms, are what's in your toothpaste that's the abrasive that cleans your teeth. If that freaks you out, I don't really care for it. So the diatoms in diatomaceous earth, which I don't see why I didn't make that connection, diatoms, diatomaceous earth, makes sense. It's not completely them. It's like them and some other particles that make up diatomaceous earth. But basically the diatoms are what do the shredding of the insect cell walls. They're glass-like body structures. They just get into the exoskeletons and just strip them, just shred them to pieces. So yeah, and diatoms, and I'm going on a limb here, I'm pretty sure diatoms are what cause red tide in places that have the ocean that apparently have the red tide, and that's poisonous. So the diatoms that are in this are not the same as red tide diatoms, I guess. But I also thought that diatoms were what the ingredient in toothpaste was that made it toxic to humans. So I don't know, because I know diatomaceous earth is supposed to be okay to consume, but then again, they say fluoride is okay to consume, and fluoride is a poison too, but just not in the... Well, anyway, let's get into the show. So yeah, I listened to 1 second after several reviews, or several recommendations in the Survival Punk group on Facebook. Sorry, I'm looking for my coffee. So a lot of people in the group, a lot of people just in general, have Audible, and they were looking for some prepper books to listen to. And it tends to be a little hard on Audible. I had a hard time really finding, like, if you search prepper, there's not a category for it, and it really should be organized where I could look up for prepper fiction and find a lot of books. In fact, I know Prepper Press has a presence on, I feel like that's a tongue twister, Prepper Press has a presence on Audible. I know the 299 Days were at one point on Audible, if not still on Audible, I haven't looked. So they're on there. And when I search for just the general keyword prepper, I don't find, like, their listing. Like, it doesn't say, Prepper Press, these are the books by these guys. I find that to be annoying. So I kind of feel like me or somebody needs to make, like, a blog post list on all the prepper books on Audible that you can check out. Because trying to find keywords in the titles, it's just not a very good search. it's not. By searching for prepper, I should have pulled up a plethora of books that I know they should have. And I looked for like dystopian and post-apocalyptic and some other keywords, and the results were not amazing. And I know it's because their algorithm is not amazing. But yeah, so a giant list of all the prepper-related books by actual knowledge. So like if someone went through and they're like, oh, that book is totally, yeah, that's a good book for a prepper. You know, as opposed to like their picking of keywords. But anyway, I found it because I looked for it directly. And I found One Second After. A lot of people had read or listened to it. I somehow had just never got around to it. And I don't even own it. Another prepper sin. I have not read Lights Out. And I know it's a good book. And I had a copy of it. A PDF copy, not a physical copy. And I just haven't got around to it. You know, there's only so much time. So if, and I don't think it has an Audible version, which is terrible. That's my preferred reading method because I have time to kill while driving to work and I'd rather listen to audiobooks. So I got this audiobook and started listening to it. I have thoughts on it. When I was listening to it, I was like, I definitely need to talk about this. It needs to be brought up on the air. And being a solo episode is a little bit better because Mike did not listen to the book and he would have no clue what's going on, much like usual. But, I prefer him to be somewhat educated on the topics where he can at least add some information. Doing a book review on a book that he hasn't listened to, not really anything, no value there. Best to do this one as a solo one. And I thought about doing like super janky old school and just recording this one in the car. I didn't know. One Second After basically follows John Matherson, former almost one-star general. He left the military to take care of his wife, who's dying of cancer. Spoiler alert, guys. I am not good at doing book reviews without giving spoilers. If you have not listened to the book and you do care about spoilers, go listen to it, then come back and listen to this episode. It can be like the Survival Punk Book Club. If you have listened to the book or read the book, then proceed. If you do not care about spoilers, proceed, and hopefully I can talk you into listening to it, because it's worth it, as we will see in my final thoughts. So yeah, John Matherson leaves the military, becomes a professor in a small mountain town in North Carolina. Black Mountain, I believe. Black Mountain. And the surrounding area. To take care of his wife and his two daughters, because that's where his wife had grown up. So her mom and dad were in that place and, you know, lots of friends and family. Or at least lots of friends. I don't think they mentioned any other family besides the mother-in-law and the father-in-law. No. I don't think they did. That's kind of odd. An old southern town with, like, southern roots, and that's the only family in that entire town? That is weird. There should have been cousins in that story. But anyway. And Matheson, while he was in the military, had been part of a report to Congress or some higher up, some government officials on the dangers of an EMP. So he still had his copy, at least, I guess, of the report with all the information in the scientific mumbo jumbo that they didn't really explain because they said it was scientific mumbo jumbo and no one really understood it. Okay. To be honest, I probably would not have understood it. And I kind of want to bring on a subject matter expert on EMPs to be able to talk about them. because this was kind of an eye-opening book in that regard. And we'll talk about that. So yeah, he co-authored this report on the dangers of EMP. And so he was very knowledgeable of it. He knew it was a weakness that we had, a super vulnerability, if you will. Yeah, let that sink in. So anyway, he's in this town. His wife did die of cancer, spoiler alert. And, you know, he was a single dad raising his two daughters. One was like 16 and one was, you know what, the opening pages of the book was her birthday. And I can't remember, we'll just say 11 or 12. I don't remember. I don't remember how old the Jennifer daughter was. Elizabeth, I was like, what is the other daughter's name? It was Jennifer and Elizabeth. And his wife's name was Mary. His father and mother-in-law, that was Jen. So Jen and Jennifer, named after the grandmother. You know, and they're having Jennifer's birthday party when all of the power goes out. John is on the cell phone and it clicks off and he's like, oh, I was just hung up on. And then he was like, oh, the power's off. Because typical dad, this is written, I don't know, probably several years ago. So it was more than likely a flip phone cell phone that he was on. They mentioned texting, but this was super early on and a lot of older people took a while to adapt to texting. I was texting on like my Nokia 5100 back in the day, dude. Like, people are like, what is this thing you just sent me? I'm like, that's a text message. Early adopter here. I was like, text message, SMS. I think they did. I think they just called it like, it was like, you go into your phone settings, it's like, SMS. And I'm like, what is this? And I'm like, send an SMS message. And I'm like, okay. And, well, anyway, a little bit younger. So John Matherson was older, didn't really understand cell phones. And was just like, oh, whatever. And then he's like, oh, the power must be out. And then and kept cascading. And it was maybe a day or two later when it was at least the next day when he started to even think like, oh, maybe this is an EMP pulse. Dude is a fucking expert on EMP. And he's like, oh, I don't understand. Whatever. I thought that was weird. So and he started thinking about it and started thinking about it. And I think, okay, so EMP pulse knocked out all of the electronics, everything electronic. Basically, it had like the more complicated the computer circuitry was, the definitely the more that it was fried. So that, I mean, this guy should have known right away, oh, this is definitely an EMP pulse. His mother-in-law, Jen, had an old Ford Edston. I looked up a picture of this thing as well. It's kind of a beast. They called it a beast in the book a lot. Obviously super old, no computers in there. That car ran fine. Pretty much every other car that was modern did not run. You know, like VW buses and bugs, they ran fine. There's no computers in them. Probably everything after like, God, 60 or something would for sure not run. 70, yeah, because pretty, you know, like fuel injectors, gone. Carburetors, so if you have a carburetic engine, probably a good chance that it might run. If you have a car with no electronics, probably going to run. You know, probably. Well, it should. But, you know, we're all theoretical. We've not really, you know, built a small fake city and set up a small EMP pulse to take out just that fake city to see what does and doesn't affect, you know, and there's variables. You know, if the EMP pulse goes off and you're in a subterranean parking garage far enough away from the EMP blast, then your stuff might be fine. So, and if you are smart and you shielded your electronics, then they'll be fine. They didn't really mention a whole lot about that. There were some things that still worked here and there. So yeah, EMP pulse goes off, and then it's them you know, surviving after post power grid, post, you know, EMP pulse. So let's talk about the good in this book. And there was quite a bit of good. I definitely wasn't bored during the book. I didn't want to stop listening. Not really. There was times where I was yelling at my radio and I'm like, "You fool, why are you doing this?" You know. And there's a few little qualms I have, and we'll talk about that. Ah! It's my alarm clock going off. Anyway. So, I really liked how, one second after, how William Forstner, the author whose name I haven't mentioned until now, how he portrays what I feel to be a very realistic, gritty, and dark depiction of what America and the world, parts of the world at least, would be like post-EMP pulse. And, you know, it's, okay, it's not as dark and bleak as The Road. That book is terrible. That book is terrible. I think I threw away my copy because I hated it so much. But also at the same point, it's not a bright, happy future we'd be looking at, you know, post-EMP pulse. You know, the power goes off. The first 24 hours, the death toll is going to be insane. You know, so anyone being operated on, probably dead. Anyone on life support, dead. Because, oh, by the way, yes, hospitals have backup generators. They are not EMP hardened. So the power goes out, the backup generators go out, everyone being operated on, everyone on life support, dead right there. Everyone in an airplane drops out of the sky. There may be survivors, but you also got to think there's no rescue squad coming. So the people that would survive now because rescue squad showed up, rushed them to the hospitals, performed life-saving emergency operations on them, they're dead. So you got to think. What, at any time there's hundreds, thousands of airplanes in the sky, your survivability rate probably small. I mean, just making up a statistic, because all statistics are made up anyway, I would guess like, I don't know, 1% maybe of all people. So, you know, out of those hundreds or thousands of airplane crashes, I think you'd see a few survivors that would live long enough to really care. You know, maybe someone hit a mountain and didn't crash that bad and just, you know, kept eating his neighbors on the plane for a while. That might be a thing. There's no rescue ever, so you'd have to just live there. You know, diabetics, insulin-dependent diabetics, they're dead. I mean, there's no hope for them. There is pretty much, oh yeah, shortly after that, you know, like 30 days after, when all of the mental medicine is gone, you're going to have a lot of crazy motherfuckers. You know, people that are dependent on their Xanax and their other medicines to keep them normal in society. We don't have to deal with, you know, the massive amounts of psycho wards they did before the invention of some of these medicines. You know, good or bad, you know, there's a lot of people that are on medicine that should not be. You know, just man up and deal with life. But there is a portion of people that are legitimately crazy and do need to be on medicine. And without that medicine, you're going to have crazies. You know, and it should hit the fan like this. A mob mentality will affect some people. You know, they're like, well, I've always wanted to go out and murder people, so now's a good time, you know. There will definitely, you know, and I tend to try to have faith in humanity as an anarchist, that I feel that we should be able to, I feel that we can and should govern ourselves freely. But there are scumbags. It's just the way it is. So, and there are some people that would, oh my God, they would love this opportunity. You know, there are people that want to Jeffrey Dahmer it up and eat people. And this would be their excuse. And they talk about that in this book. So, that's, it's would happen, yeah. Other things. They did realistically portray that the extent of the lack of technology, that basically everything modern and computerized is gone. They went into a good detail on, you know, they talked about how it worked, you know, line of sight, high altitude. So they talked about it. They didn't go super sciencey, which is good and bad, you know. It's a lot of people's eyes would have just glossed over and their interest would have started to wane the more they talked like scientific theory and stuff. Some people would have geeked out on it, you know. And to be honest, that's probably not within the scope of this book. If you are the kind of person, like myself, that would geek out about the, you know, the more advanced scientific explanations and whatnot on an EMP pulse, you probably need to seek that elsewhere. Not really in the scope of a fiction book. So, they did talk about it. And they mentioned sort of anomalies, like, you know, some of the cars in the parking garages, they worked because they were a little bit shielded from, you know, all the concrete. Some old generators still worked because there was not computers in them. You know, like, if you have the much beloved Honda EU2000, that thing is super computer regulated. If you have one and it's not shielded, which, to be honest, almost no one preps for EMP because it's a rabbit hole, you know? EMP blasts are a rabbit hole in the prepper sphere that you can get lost on that path. You can go down that rabbit hole and become super consumed with EMP blasts. And it's not really, it's not really going to help you in a lot of things. Like, if you sacrifice food storage because you're obsessed over building Faraday cages to secure everything you own that has electronics in it, I mean, you'll have power, but you won't have food. So, you know, you're dead. Whereas, you know, having lots of food and no power, probably going to be better off. So, there's a fine line, and, you know, I feel like you kind of got to, you know, do a little bit of prepping here, you do a little bit of prep. You got to be more balanced and spread out and diversified and not go down the EMP hole all the way to crazy town. That's, you know, that's my belief. Like, having it in consideration and thinking, like, maybe you want to EMP harden a Kindle tablet with a bunch of survival resource books on it, you know, so that you can have that post-apocalyptic, you know, and maybe some backup power, you know, like little things, but you want to make sure other things are shored up first. That's my philosophy. And like I said, I'm going to find a subject matter expert to bring on and have a chat with them. And we'll take away what we will. So, like I said, I did feel that William Forstner depicted it very realistically. And then at the end of the book, not to avoid too many spoilers, some of the long-term effects when you get to hear what's been going on. Because, you know, without the internet and without cell phones and, you know, telegraph and instant communication, you really don't know what's going on outside of your immediate area. You know, and communication would be vital, and that needs to be something that needs to be set up and redundant. Like, if you had a hardened ham radio, hidden in like a tube or something, ready to go. That would be a smart idea, you know. And whether you have your ham license or not, after the shit hits the fan this hard, the FCC is not going to come for you. Yeah, they're just not. So listening, you know, some hardened communication would be a smart idea. No one in this book really had that. There was an old vacuum tube radio that, you know, was able to pick up some stuff after a while. And, you know, so it really showed the death toll, you know, the population of America dwindled, you know, and we're somewhere over 300 million, I think so. Which, I mean, I think it was 300.5 last time I looked, but populations go up so fast and, you know, there's no telling. And I'm not going to look it up right now. The book does some good examples on showing you things that will work in an EMP pulse. And I don't mean like technology wise. I mean like techniques and things you can do when the shit hits the fan because of an EMP. You know, like hiding your insulin in a bathroom, basement, toilet, tank. Not the pee part, but the back of the tank where the water is stored at. That will tend to be one of the cooler places. I don't know if they mentioned it, but yeah, putting drinks in a stream will keep them cool. You know, things that they talk about, a lot of things like medical things, whatever, that was done like 100 years ago, like quarantining anyone that comes into your town, you know, for a certain amount of time. Like you really have to start to think, you know, 200 years ago, 100 years ago, like what were people doing back then before electricity and our energy abundant society really took over. So they mentioned that a lot. The medical stuff was pretty good. They went into that a good deal. I mean, disease is going to be rampant. And, you know, we don't have all the medicines, you know, like even antibacteria, like an antibacteria. My mind is gone blank. Antibiotics. I'm like, antibacterial organism things. No, antibiotics. They're going to start running low. All of the medicines are going to start running low. Any minor surgeries and stuff are going to start to have to be done without, you know, painkillers. And afterwards, painkillers will, you know, be given out on a much stricter basis. Once again, all the crazy people are going to snap out, you know, like the painkiller addicted people. They're going to snap out. All the addicts are going to snap out. You cigarette people, you're going to snap out. Yeah. And I got something to talk about cigarettes in the bad section of this review. So besides medical, it goes a lot in on politics and governing of a community. And it does a good job. I mean, and I don't really care for this, but I don't have a good, you know, counterposition of, you know, they tend to move a lot towards socialism in the governing of this city, this Black Rock Mountain, in the book. And, you know, the main character, John Matherson, you know, he's like, I hate communism. He's like, but in this situation, you know, to keep people alive, to keep any people alive, really, there are certain things you have to do. And I mean, they kind of tiptoe around it, you know, and like, they don't start confiscating food from people's houses, but they make deals here and there, and there is like there is a soup line every day, you know, and different food like that. And they have, like, you know, ration cards you can get. And if you get ration cards, you basically can't hoard food. You have to contribute any food you have and or get via hunting to the community, I believe. You know, and they do a lot of sort of very communistic things. But it's a lot of it's not forced communism, which I like. There's ways to, like, opt out of it, which this is a rabbit hole. I feel that communism can work on a pure voluntary basis. I know some of you are probably screaming at your radio right now. Forcing an entire country or community to be communistic, bad. Definitely bad. We've seen time and time again that it doesn't work, and it just leads to, you know, corruption and the collapse of that country until something takes it over. But in some communities, some of these, like, free living communities, these communes, what is it, intentional living communities? I think that's what they're called now. I think they're intentional living communities. They are voluntarist communism. So you go in there and you're basically agreeing to be in a communist society. In the book, there's a lot of things you can opt out of. You know, like, it's communistic. You can't hoard food at your house if you take the community government ration cards to go get the soup line every day. But if you are a prepper and you have food at home for you and your family, you can opt out. You don't get ration cards. You don't go get in line to get the soup every day. You eat your own food, and they, the government, won't come confiscate it. So, you know, it's a bad situation, but I feel that fact that you can opt out makes it tolerable. You know, yes, it's communistic, but it's a voluntary communism. So, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I wouldn't choose to be in a communistic society. But, you know, if the shit hit the fan, maybe there's some changes you have to make. So, it for the most part, worked in the book. This community did better than a lot of the communities in America, in this story. So, it did actually a lot better than many communities. So, and this is all hypothetical, you know, but it's something to keep in mind. Yeah. So there's a lot of the governing stuff that's definitely worth listening to and sparking some thought processes there to get your mental juices going. 'Cause these are important things you're going to have to think about when the shit hits the fan, and this will give you some good ideas if it ever happens, you know, who knows. Yeah, the governing was a big thing. The bad. Let's talk about the bad. 'Cause there were some things. And up first, let's talk about priorities. I don't know if I've mentioned, I talked about type 1 diabetics, but I didn't mention that John's daughter, Jennifer, is a type 1 diabetic. Insulin dependent, needs it. Didn't really have, I think he just had his normal prescription for her in the book. Even though he knew the EMP was a big issue, he was not a prepper in any way. Even though he knew the danger and didn't even stockpile the life-saving medicine for his daughter. When the shit hits fan, and the next day he goes in the town to check things out with his mother-in-law's Ford Edston, does he go immediately Because at this point, I believe there are, like, you know, signals firing in the back of his brain, like, hey, John. Yes, John. I think this could be an EMP pulse. You might be right, John. You know, I think he's having that conversation in the back of his head, even though he's not really mentioning it. He's like, it might be an EMP pulse. Does he go straight to the pharmacy to try to acquire as much insulin as possible for his daughter, who will die without it? No. He goes to the Pakistani Mart and spends his $60 to buy $70 worth or $80 worth of cartons of cigarettes. I don't want to be racist here, but I think his name is like Habib, or we'll just say it's Habib, whatever. Owing him $20 at some point in the future to be paid, and like gives him the information like, oh, you know, smokes are going to be important. You might want to pull them off the shelf and like limit them a little bit because they'll be worth a lot of money, which he does. And, you know, he does very well for, you know, trading out smokes during the collapse. Then after that, he goes and does something else. He does something else, and then he goes somewhere else, and then he picks up some chick he's flirting with and drives her around, and then he goes to the pharmacy. Really? All of that shit's more important than insulin for your daughter? Like, you had to have... Okay. He hasn't been to the store yet. I mean, he went to the gas station to get those cigarettes. He has not even thought to be like, maybe I should run by the store and buy some food with this $60 in cash that I have because the debit cards won't work and checks won't work. But I'm going to spend all of my money plus some in the cash that I have to buy cigarettes. He eventually does make it and just by luck manages to get the pharmacist to just give him a couple things of insulin and a bag of ice to put the insulin in because insulin has to be refrigerated. And then he takes it home. So that just irked me. Like the whole rest of the book, I'm thinking, man, you could have had food. You could have had food or insulin or something much more important than like three cartons of cigarettes or whatever you got. Four cartons, maybe. Whatever. I'm sorry. You know the EMP pulse is a high probability and you know how bad it will be. You've not prepped anything. And when you think that it happens, and you know because you wrote a report on how bad it will be, you go buy cigarettes. And you've got a family. It irks me. And now that I think about it, I got one more thing to talk about. The mother-in-law, Jen, was at her house before she came and lived with John and their kids for a while, and she was worried about going back and feeding her cat and letting the cat inside to eat, and they talked about the cat a few times and then never again. What happened to the cat? That's what I want to know, people. What happened to the cat? I just wonder about these plot points that they bring up. And then they just leave. I mean, if they're like, and we got hungry one day and we ate Fluffy the cat. And we let Fluffy run into the woods to be free, you know. Or we came back one day and we found Fluffy dead. I don't know what the cat's name was because I don't think they even said. But what happened to the cat? Inquiring minds want to know. I felt like the author, William Forstner, could have done a better job developing some of these characters. You know, there was a lot of characters in the book that you really didn't know anything about, and it didn't give you the emotional feelings that you should have got for events. Like, you know, like characters, a lot of people in this book die. And sometimes, you know, you basically only know like a brief few things about them. So it's like, it's supposed to hit you hard, and you're just like, I don't really know or care. I mean, I just don't. I'm sorry, but you know, like you just hear a few things about a character here and there, and then they're like, okay, so spoiler warning. Just skip ahead if you are worried about that. It'll probably be like the next like minute or two. John's daughter, Elizabeth, the older daughter, who's like 16 or 17 or something, she is dating this boy, Ben, in the book, and they end up like basically spending the whole book together, but you really never, I mean, basically you focus on John and his dealings and stuff, so you really don't even get to spend time with the daughter and Ben, so you don't really get to know either of them. I mean, it's a few lines, basically. We really don't get to know them, you know? And then they end up having sex, unprotected sex, during the shit hit the fan, because John didn't want to have the sex talk with her or, like, go to the market and buy condoms or just get some condoms because, I mean, the demand is probably pretty low, you know, or teach the much time-honored pull-out method. I mean, that's what belly buttons are for, right? None of this stuff. So while they're basically just screwing away during the apocalypse, because that's what kids do, right? I mean, hey, baby, the apocalypse happened. Let's bang. You know, that's what happens. And they did it, you know, unprotected. He knocked her up. A super bad thing to happen during the shit hit the fan when everyone's starving to death and dying. And during the big giant fight scene towards the end of the book, Ben gets killed, you know, and he leaves this, you know, girl pregnant. It's a huge, huge, you know, part of that end of the book with, like, you know, dealing with Ben's death. You don't know jack shit about him, and you really don't care. They tried to, like, give you some emotions and some, like, investment in him, you know, like, or not investment. They didn't spend the time to do that. They tried to make you feel something for a character that you really didn't know or care about. So I was just like, whatever. I mean, yeah, that sucks that this character is going to have a baby with a dead daddy that, you know, I don't really know or care about. So I felt that, and that was just one example. There was a lot of characters in this book that they wanted you to feel something for, but then they didn't take the time to develop that character. So, you know, you're just left like, well, I don't really, whatever, I don't care. So, yeah. If you read the book, this next thing will not be applicable to you. If you read this book. But if you listen to the book from Audible, and I think there's only one, no, there's two versions, I think. So if you listen to the version, at least I don't know the guy's name. The guy that read the book was definitely a northerner, and John, the character in the book, John Matheson, the main character, he was from New Jersey. So I think this guy did John's voice very well. This Yankee that read the book. But the book was set in North Carolina, and a lot of the characters, most of them, are North Carolinians. And his accent was atrocious. I mean, it was like anyone that tries to over the top make fun of the South, you know, like Ben's voice was like, okay, sorry, but I am from Tennessee. I've lived my entire life born and raised in Tennessee. My Southern accent at least to my own ears, is not that good. Even when I try to make a Southern accent, it's not that good. This guy was like, "Yes, sir, I will do that, Mr. John." It was like, what the fuck, dude? It was so over the top, like, crazy fake Southern. Like, it was like, Gone with the Wind. It was like trying to like do that super crazy old deep South. And it was like, oh my God, there was an old, black Marine in this book. And it was, dude, it was straight out of that, like, Matthew Broderick Glory movie. Like, they made this dude like just the oldest, blackest guy ever. And I'm like, come on, old black Southern. Yeah. It was like, I just expected the narrator to bust out with like, "Yes, sir, master, anytime." And I'm like, oh, come on. You know, I just, you know, and the guy read well, but he did voices that were bad on a lot of people. The times that, you know, like John, I guess, was like his normal or semi-normal voice, that did well. And, you know, and his reading pace and all that was good. Like, him being an actor of that caliber was good. You know, and I'm peculiar about my audiobook narration. Like, I know what I like and I know what I don't like. And to be honest, mostly I just like old British guys reading books usually. Just me. But yeah. He needed to not do those Southern accents, or they needed to find a guy from the South who could do a decent, and you don't need to, like, turn it to 11 and have, like, the fake, you know, Southern accent. Just, you know, a little bit of Southern in there. I don't know. You know, so maybe me being from the South makes me a bit critical because... Well, you're stereotyping us is like, you know, we don't all speak like the deep South of, like, you know, old movies and shit. So, and I didn't feel that everybody needed to have that deep South accent, and especially if you can't do it well. So that's just my pet peeve. And it's only applicable to the audible version. Sort of lastly, before I get to my final thoughts, wrap it up and move on. I felt that it could have had a bit more survival info. You know, like, I felt that it was just, there's a fine line. I mean, if you read or listen, and I think I might listen to the audio version, the audible version of Patriots, it's probably on the too much side of survival info, where it basically gets to, like, it's a survival manual that has some characters talking in it, you know, whereas, like, other books are more focused on the personal interactions, and they don't always give you, like, you should have silver stored in rolls of this size and this size, pre-1964, blah, 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 blah. You know, like, it doesn't always, like, delve into the survival manual side. It's a fine line. I mean... And it goes on personal preference. I felt they could have thrown in a couple more nuggets of, you know, survival info. Like, just think, you know, like, well, it's a small town. There's farmers. There's probably lots of fertilizer. There's a way to make ice from fertilizer that would have been useful in the book. But they didn't really, you know, they didn't really mention it. That's just one example. I mean, I didn't specifically, like, they'd better include how to make ice from fertilizer or I'm out. No, I mean, you know, there could have just been a few more little things. They didn't talk about the precious metal things at all, because I kind of felt that it was still too early in the collapse, and I'm willing to bet there's like two sequels, I think. I'm willing to bet one of the sequels they do bring up eventually moving to using some precious metals for barter, but at the point where everyone's starving and dying... You know, they were bartering with, like, 22 rifles and meat and some other stuff, but they weren't using precious metals because it's still too early, you know. But it will come. It will come. So yeah, I just felt that it could have used a little bit more survival info, but, you know, it is what it is. And with that, let us wrap up this episode. And I'm at an hour, and I was, I like to keep it at an hour. I feel that that's a good value for your imaginary buck that you're spending. If you do want to spend a non-imaginary buck, you can join the Survival Punk Army. There are some discounts in there. There are some exclusive audio things in there. You can download pretty much all the episodes in zip files for your convenience. And there are more things coming all the time. And it helps support the show. You know, I use it to buy new audio equipment or, you know, boost posts on Facebook so more people can see and more people can listen and more people can join the Survival Punk Army to make more people listen. That's the way it works. You know, and if you've got, you know, like personally, there's different levels of joining the Survival Punk Army. There's the yearly membership, like 6 month, 3 month, 1 month. 1 month is $5 a month. You technically will spend more money per year spending $5 a month. Who notices $5 a month? I do, because it adds up to all the people that join for $5 a month. And, you know, it's $5 here, $5 here, $5 there. That's probably my favorite membership, because it's a nice reoccurring money. But that's it. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope that you have or will go listen to this audiobook, or if you don't have an Audible account, just go sign up and you can get like one or two free ebooks or audiobooks. So just go sign up, listen to this book, and then cancel your membership. Or keep it if you like it. I mean, I don't make money, I don't care. but it's definitely, and then if you do that, come to this episode or go to Survival Punk's Facebook page and let's discuss it. Let's see what you think. And as always, DIY to survive an EMP blast. Use guys.